Translation: Maharaj Yudhishthir, whose enemy was never born, performed his daily morning duties by praying, offering fire sacrifice to the sun god, and offering obeisances, grains, cows, land, and gold to the brahmanas. He then entered the palace to pay respects to the elderly. However, he could not find his uncles or aunt, the daughter of King Subala. Purport given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Maharaj Yudhishthir was the most pious king because he personally practiced daily the pious duties for the householders. The householders are required to rise early in the morning, and after bathing they should offer respects to the deities at home by prayers, by offering fuel in the sacred fire, by giving the brahmanas in charity land, cows, grains, gold, etc., and at last offering to the elderly members due respects and obeisances. One who is not prepared to practice injunctions prescribed in the Shastras cannot be a good man simply by book knowledge. Modern householders are practiced different modes of life, namely to rise late and then take bed tea without any sort of cleanliness and without any purificatory practices as mentioned above. The household children are taken to practice what the parents practice, and therefore the whole generation glides towards hell. Nothing good can be expected from them unless they associate with sadhus. Like Dhritarashtra, the materialistic person may take lessons from a sadhu like Vidura and thus be cleansed of the effects of modern life. Maharaj Yudhishthira, however, could not find in the palace his two uncles, namely Dhritarashtra and Vidura, along with Gandhari, the daughter of King Subala. He was anxious to see them and therefore asked Sanjaya, the private secretary of Dhritarashtra. So, I'll repeat the verse again. Ajata shatru kritamaitra hutagnir vipram natva tila go bhumi rukmai griham pravishto guru vandanaya nacha pasyat pitaro sobalimcha. Maharaj Yudhishthir, whose enemy was never born, performed his daily morning duties by praying, offering fire sacrifice to the sun god, and offering obeisances, grains, cows, land, and gold to the brahmanas. He then entered the palace to pay respects to the elderly. However, he could not find his uncle's aunt, the daughter of King Subala. Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So, one is back again. We have a rota of like the regular speakers giving each week. As Radha Govind mentioned yesterday, we have many, many wonderful senior qualified speakers, but due to the current conditions, we're having to obviously rely on the devotees here. But I take it as one's mercy as well, that Krishna is bestowing on oneself. So please pray for me that I can say something worthwhile and that I don't make any mistakes. So, okay, so there's quite a few points here to look at in this verse. We'll see how much we can cover because you've got half an hour. Obviously, as we know now, Radha Govind Prabhu yesterday gave a nice narrative of what's going on in the last few verses. Vidura has now finally convinced Dhritarashtra to leave the palace. And now we've come back to the palace. So we've been with Dhritarashtra for quite some time now. And his kind of journey, his thought process, his paradigm shift, shall we say, that he's been going on. Now we're going back to the palace and seeing what's going on there. You know, meanwhile, back at the ranch, as they say. So Maharaj Yudhishthir, he's now obviously like, you know, taking stock of the situation. And he's kind of looking at, okay, what's going on? He's looking for his uncles, Vidura, Dhritarashtra. Because, you know, the thing is, even Navadip Chandra probably said it a couple of weeks ago, when a person takes sannyas, it's not like a big hoo-ha. It's not like when they renounce it. It's just literally middle of the night, just go. You know, just leave everything, just go. Almost like the way, you know, that Prabhupada convinces disciples, just take it and just do it, you know. There's no need to make a whole song and dance about it. So in the same way, that's what Vidura did with the Dhritarashtra. Just leave in the middle of the night and let's just go. And obviously somehow Gandhari Mataji, she obviously, clocked on, and then she also went as well, like the chaste, dutiful wife that she is. So now Maharaj Yudhishthira is left in the palace thinking, okay, what's going on? Where are my uncles? Obviously, the realization will start to dawn on him of what's going on. And that will be covered more in the subsequent verses. But here, it's nice actually. This verse kind of like gives you a little understanding into Maharaj Yudhishthira and his character. So if you actually look at the Sanskrit itself, It starts off with, he's referred to as Ajatashatru. Ajatashatru means someone whose enemy is never born. Basically, effectively, someone who doesn't have any enemies. And I know, obviously, this was also slightly touched on yesterday, but you think about Yudhishthira's life, right? I mean, he had people trying to do him over since he was like, you know, like a little kid, basically, right? Him and his brothers, right? And you're thinking, you know, no enemies whatsoever. Same thing, actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj would also, you know, meditate on the fact that a Vaishnava has no enemies. And if you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life, same thing. He had like people literally trying to kill him, you know, like the Smartha Brahmanas and so on and so forth. So you can see that in his life, he went through countless adversities. And yet, you know, he had so many people trying to like, you know, attack him and take away what he had, what was rightfully his. But he never actually was considered to have any enemies. So how do we actually see that? Well, you have to look at from the perspective of the Vaishnav. So from Yudhishthira's mindset, he has no enemies. Because as we know, a Vaishnav does not take whatever is going on in the material world too seriously. Okay? And they don't take what's happening to them so seriously. They're not so emotionally connected because their emotional connection is with the higher reality, which is with Krishna. So Prabhupada often would say, do not resent the agents of your karma. Okay, whenever things happen to us. And I'm saying it theoretically. Obviously, in practice, it takes a bit of time to actually, you know, internalize that. But one should not resent the agents of their karma. We know that, obviously, these things happen. Canto 10, chapter 14, verse 8, you know, tattenu kampam shushakshmashano, right? The fact is that distresses will come our way, but we have to just remain peaceful and carry on with our service to Krishna. Trust in Krishna's plans and full faith carry on with our service. Right now, of course, I know we've been mentioning this lesson after session after session, but you know, even if one looks at the current period around us, even devotees will ask as well, you know, why is this happening? And you know, we have obviously some devotees that have left their bodies. Recently, we just had Naresh Prabhu left their body. Yesterday, I was speaking to Godruma Prabhu about this as well. You know, we're seeing him every Sunday. You know, and we're seeing that, what is the angle there? Why would Krishna do such wonderful devotees? But often it's often the case that Krishna will use material calamities to then take devotees back. Like, you've been here long enough, you've been down there long enough, now just come back to me, you know? Is enough, you just come back now, you know? So the same way, a Vaishnav does not look at the bad things happening as just something that's attacking them. They see his agents as karma. And at the same time, the Vaishnav realizes that whatever people are doing to them, they're also helplessly acting according to the modes, right? They ultimately are seeing it's the spirit soul underneath. There's actually a soul, but it's encaged in this horrible body, which is making them do all these like bad things, you know? Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavi hastini suni cheva sapake cha pandita samadarshinaha, right? The Vaishnav always sees the spirit soul underneath. And it's almost like they know that the person cannot help do what they're doing. It's almost like, you know, when you're like an addict, a drug addict, the drug addict can't help what they're doing because they're so engrossed in the drugs that they'll do irrational things. Yeah. So this is, one of the key things about Vaishnav. He has no enemies. He does not see anyone as his enemies. And again, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj himself said that you should be wishing the greatest benefit to your worst enemy, your so-called worst enemy. Okay. So there's the kind of like philosophical perspective on how to view friends and enemies. There's also the practicality as well, right? There's two levels. There's the Nitya Dharma and then there's the whole Vyavaharika. The Vyavaharika, which is how we interact with people on a day-to-day basis. A Vaishnava is expert as actually seeing that, looking at people's conditionings, not taking those conditionings seriously, but at the same time making sure that they're practically take into consideration those conditionings, okay? So we're going to touch that a little bit later with Maharaj Yudhishthira as well, because remember, he's in a position of a Kshatriya, so he has to do such things, right? But before we go on to that, it's also said a few of the things that Maharaj Yudhishthira was doing. So he performed his daily morning duties, like prayers, sacrifice. And it said here, offering fire sacrifice to the sun god, right? Now we know in Vaishnav culture, that, you know, it's Krishna, right? Swayam Bhagavan, right? Krishna stu Swayam Bhagavan, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Anadiradi Govinda, he's the Sarvakarana Karanam, right? Everything like that. And, you know, we know, of course, Krishna's telling Arjun that worshippers of demigods, they're Alpa Medasa of small intelligence, all these things. But then we're looking at Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira is a Vaishnav. He's a devotee of Krishna, right? High-level devotee of Krishna. And yet he's offering sacrifice to the sun god, and he's giving grains, land, and gold, cows and everything, to the Vipra. So it says they're Brahmanas, but also remember that amongst Brahmanas, there are different gradings of Brahmanas. Vipra are like, they're not necessarily Vaishnav Brahmanas, you know? They're like, Vipras could be like Brahmanas who are very materially skilled in a lot of things that give teaching to other people, but not necessarily full-on Vaishnavs either. But still, he's giving charity to them, right? And then on top of that, it said that he's also giving Guru Vandana. Now, we know when we say Guru Vandana, right? Like, you know, in the prayer that we do every morning, it's to the spiritual master. But here, it's actually offering respect to the elderly members. So that could be Dhritarashtra, Gandhari Mataji, you know, all these people. So when you look at these things, it could almost seem like Yudhishthira is performing a lot of karmakandic duties here. You know, demigod worship, giving to the kind of like, you know, Brahman, material type Brahmanas and to the elderly members. Why is he doing this? Well, this is where I guess a little bit of Arnashram comes in, is that remember that he's living at a time, this is during the Vedic time, where there's Vedic Varnashram in place. So he's also in the position of a Kshatriya Dharma. So he has to also maintain the Dharma and actually do the Kshatriya duties. And that means he also has to show the example for the main population of what to do. Now remember that even at that time, it's not that everyone is a Vaishnav, okay? Because Krishna says to Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschit Yatati Siddhaya, right? That out of many, many thousands of people, one may come to me. He's telling this to Arjun at that time, 5,000 years ago. That means even at that time, it's not that everyone is a devotee of Krishna. That means most people are on the yoga ladder at some point. You know, they might be on just karmakandic level. So therefore, even though he himself is on a higher Vaishnav level, he still needs to show the example to the local population of how they should act, even according to karmakandic regulations, right? Sometimes we even see certain preachers do that. You know, even amongst our sannyasis, when you have like, I know of one case of a Mataji, she's a full-on initiated devotee now, but she had a lot of attraction to, you know, demigoddess Kali. And then she went to a certain Maharaj in our movement and says, what do? I've got so much attraction. And then Maharaj said to her that, it's fine, worship Kali. Kalima, but at the same time also bring in Krishna as well. So as a spiritual practitioners, we have to also see what the people need. And it's not that we can just, you know, go like a sledgehammer and just say, okay, get rid of all your habits and everything you're doing, and just that's it, Krishna all the way. You have to see where they're at and what they can take at the right time. And so Yudhishthira Maharaj, through his example, he's showing this, right? Yad yad acharite sheshta. If he does not set the right example, then what happens? Prabhupada says they're going to degrade and start taking bed tea, right? They're going to start to not shower, and they're going to have their breath. Someone else was saying, isn't it, a few days ago, Sutapapu, right, about bed in breakfast. That's like the fashionable, the English, you know, the thing to do now, right? Yeah, sorry. Breakfast in bed. Yeah. And then taking breakfast in bed, you know, sipping on your Earl Grey and all that kind of stuff, right? But we understand that obviously we have to obviously establish what is Vaishnav Dharma here, right? So this is obviously what Yudhishthira is doing. And this is something actually is mentioned a lot as well in a book called Jaiva Dharma, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about Vyavaharika Dharma. And he says that even Vaishnav's not there to ruffle society too much. There's a time and a place, don't get me wrong. There is a time and a place. We know that Mahaprabhu did obviously launch the first civil rights movement, right, through the Harinam Sankirtan. And in one sense, you could say that when Prabhupada was, you know, launching the whole movement in America, it was quite kind of like out there, pioneering in one sense. But the idea is that Vaishnavs try to work as much with the social regulations as much as possible, and through that, give them the love of Godhead, okay? Vaishnavas always go through the path of least resistance, you know? That's lazy intelligence, actually, if you think about it, yeah? So this is one thing that we have to understand. Even, actually, even if you go beyond Mahabharata, even during the days of, like, Ramayana, which is that even yugas before that, when it was even more kind of like closer to Vaishnavism, overall, even then you can see someone like Hanuman, before he jumped from the, you know, from India to, you know, Lanka, right? He didn't just jump straight away. He took the blessings of Jambavan, which is fair enough, because Jambavan is actually a senior Vaishnav. But he also took the blessings of Sugriva and Angad. Angad is like Sugriva's like son, right? And like, in one sense, Hanuman's like, you could say he's more elevated than them. Well, no, I'm not saying one, he is actually more elevated than them. You can see that from their lives, right? But he stood at that. Why? To maintain the culture. So in Krishna consciousness, we've got Krishna conscious culture, which is the tattva. No, sorry. We've got the Krishna conscious philosophy, right? Which is the tattva. And then you've got the culture. They both have to go hand in hand. What we find as well with many devotees that come, they might be very, very clued up with the philosophy. They might know a lot of verses and they know the philosophical understanding, but then the culture might be a bit, you know, raw, shall we say, right? But actually, it's the culture that you practice is what actually is going to attract people to Krishna consciousness, right? First, they see the culture. How cultured is this person? And believe me, I'm preaching to myself here because I need to also develop my culture more and more, as Sutapa knows over the years. Once he told me I'm the most uncultured person in the ashram. This is a few years ago anyway. I probably still am actually. But anyway, so the point is that, so you have the culture, then through the culture, then people start to be attracted to you, and then they'll actually start to see the deep understanding. That's why Prabhupada often said, Vaishnav is a gentleman, right? Even when he's walking down these grounds here, and a man, you know, the local man came and he said to him, good morning, right? And he said to his disciples, this is preaching. I'm preaching to this man by saying good morning to show that we're gentlemen, you know? Things like, not that Prabhupada said to him, you're not the body. Remember, Vaishnavas are obviously very intelligent. They know what to say when. Prabhupada obviously at the same time would say tough things if he knows that the people can take it. Like, I think Sutapa was mentioning that day when he's talking to Set, the one, you know, helping with the temple development, and told him that you're living like a pig. But that's because Prabhupada can judge the mood of that person, what they can take, right? Like Vidura did the same thing to Dhritarashtra. But the point is that we always go by the culture aspect, okay? And the understanding as well that we live by the culture is not that we're above it all as well. As Vaishnavas, it's not that we're above the social regulations either. It's interesting actually, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj and his four brothers, you know how all the personalities in Mahabharata then take birth again in Gaur Leela, right? So they actually took birth as these five brothers. One of whom, actually, I'm sure you all know, very famous Vaishnav is Ramananda Rai, right? Yudhishthira Maharaj and his brothers are like, you know, they've got Ramananda Rai, you've got Gopinath Bhatnaik Rai, you've got Vaninath Rai. These are all the five brothers, and they're the sons of a Vaishnav called Bhavananda Rai, right? This is Gaur Leela, right? And the same thing has been demonstrated in a pastime where Gopinath Bhatnaik Rai, he might actually well be Yudhishthira himself, actually. Yeah, I think he might be Yudhishthira, actually, Gopinath Rai. And he was at one point using the king's resources for his own kind of expenses. So then he got put into prison for it, right? And at that time, obviously, now don't get me wrong, he's a great Vaishnav, but he got put into prison. And then through that, obviously then eventually the brothers, they appealed to Mahaprabhu that please go to Maharaj Pratap, this is in Maharaj Prataparudra's kingdom, that please appeal to him to release him, okay? He made a mistake and stuff, right? And after that, Mahaprabhu actually says to Gopinath Bhatnaik Rai, these are the Pandavas themselves, right? That, you know, you shouldn't be misusing resources. And the understanding we can get from this is that as Vaishnavas, it's not that we're above the laws. It's not that we're above the culture of the day. Just because of Vaishnavas are above it all, we can do what we want and flout any rules. Yes, I know back in the day when the, you know, initial disciples of Prabhupada would, like, you know, go past certain barriers. Emergency situation, of course. But for us right now, we try to work with the society as much as possible instead of going against society as well. Okay? And at the same time, it also shows that Mahaprabhu, he actually looked after the Gopinath Bhatnaik Rai and the brothers on a material level as well as on a spiritual level. So we know that as well, that, you know, when you come to Krishna, akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udharadi tivrena bhakti yogena yajita purusham param, that even if you have many desires or no desires at all, if you come to Krishna, then he will look after you, right? He will make sure that you're materially at peace so you can carry your bhakti nicely as well. Okay. Now you may ask that, what about those devotees that are living on the edge? Because you do get certain devotees that are just like, you know, But that's because Krishna will give those devotees what they need. And some devotees, for them, it's right for them to be in that situation. That's what's going to give them their growth. But if you look at most devotees, Krishna knows that most of it can't handle that level of material austerity. So we'll keep them, he'll give them enough to be sufficient so they can carry their bhakti nicely without having to go through too much trouble, right? And in some cases, Krishna might give lots of wealth because he knows that those devotees are also mature enough to use that wealth in Krishna's service without getting too bewildered. Of course, Prabhupada does say, actually, no, there's actually a verse about Grihastha Ashram where it says, ideal Grihastha should live in a house like a hut. So, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Sri Sri Gaunitai ki. Right? The ideal, of course, is that the Grihasthas should be living simply, thinking highly. But, like I said, it's about the personal, which Vaishnava is in question. And Krishna will cater accordingly to them. Like in Yudhishthira Maharaj's case, Krishna knew that a man of his caliber can actually, deal with this level of power and still maintain his dharma, his Vaishnava knowledge and understanding and everything like that. It says in the Mahabharata that if one thinks of Yudhishthira, then their intelligence in dharma will increase. Because he was the epitome of dharma. He's actually the son of Dharmaraj, yeah. He himself is often referred to as Dharmaraj Yudhishthira as well. Okay. Now, of course, at the same time, since we're talking about Maharaj Yudhishthira, I'm sure so those of you who know a bit about Mahabharata know that he led practically a perfect life, living according to dharma, but he also maybe made certain decisions in his life which could be seen as questionable. Right? And this is something that we see again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Mahabharata, that you see devotees making mistakes again and again. But that's what's needed for us to learn, right? We need to actually see, and it's actually, those are exalted devotees that Krishna takes and uses them as his instruments to make mistakes to teach the rest of humanity. Okay? So I guess one of the things as well is that people often ask, well, let me ask you guys, what do you think is one of the controversial decisions that Yudhishthira made, which people often level at him? Lied about the... Oh, Ashwatthama. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, fine. That's one. Okay, since you mentioned that, okay, I'll try and respond to that one. So one thing that you leveled at Yudhishthira is that he's known to never lie in his life, right? I wasn't actually thinking of those ones, but okay, fine. He is said to never lie, okay? And then... For those of you who know Mahabharata, in the Kurukshetra war, he was obviously, you had Drona on the other side, who was killing people indiscriminately, right? And actually, Drona's transgressing his own dharma by killing non-stop. Actually, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, Drona should not have fought in the war, because he's a brahmana. It was okay for him to teach, but not fight. But anyway, that's a different topic, right? But, so he was killing non-stop. And all the Pandava army was thinking, why, how do we stop him? And then Krishna says to Yudhishthira, no. Krishna says that the only way in which you can stop Drona is if he knows that his son Ashwatthama has died. Right? Because that will break Drona's heart and he won't have the willpower to fight anymore. So then, you know what happens? Bhima goes and kills an elephant called Ashwatthama, and starts boasting to Drona, Ashwatthama's dead, I've killed Ashwatthama. And Drona's like, no, this can't be, this cannot be. And then Drona's thinking, you know what, Bhima, you know what, he might be lying to me. You know, I wouldn't put it past Bhima. I'll only believe that my son has died if Yudhishthira Maharaj actually says it so. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj is in a dilemma. And Krishna himself tells Yudhishthira Maharaj that you say Ashwatthama's dead, right? So Yudhishthira Maharaj goes to Drona and says, yes, Ashwatthama is dead. Of course, one can say it's a white lie because Yudhishthira could be internalizing that it's the elephant that's dead, right? There's two aspects to it. One, some people say that he said, Ashwatthama is dead, the elephant, and he says it under his breath. But then other versions say that actually no, he just said straight up, Ashwatthama is dead. Either way, you can say that he lied, right? And it's said that at that point, because he never lied, his chariot was always a few feet above the ground. And at that point, his chariot went on the ground. So the Acharya's commentary says on this, that one aspect is that you have dharma, you have adharma. And to lie is obviously adharma. However, there is also higher dharma, which is Krishna. Krishna's dharma. And it said that sometimes for the higher principle, adharma and dharma can cancel each other out. And remember that he committed an adharma, but that's leveled against the massive adharma that Dronacharya committed in the war and before the war as well. And remember, it's under Krishna's jurisdiction. Sometimes Krishna may get you to do things. Remember, this is not the general rule. This is on a very, very high level. Krishna may get you to do things which are considered like upper dharma, you know, like beyond the dharma, right? And this is one of those examples. But remember, because it's Krishna and he is suddham, he is apapavidham, right? He is completely purifying. No sinful reactions will touch him. And therefore, whatever you do under his direction will not also touch you as well. But remember, you have to be very, very, very elevated to do this. And so do not get the idea that, well, let's just do what we can. Because remember, we just talked about Yudhishthira following the rules of life and society, right? So we must be very clear about that, right? So in this case, these adharma, dharma can cancel each other out. At the same time, what about the reaction of his chariot falling on the ground? So the acharyas say that it's not a big deal. You may, in the pursuit of devotional service, may lose certain piety or gain certain piety. It doesn't matter. Devotional service comes first, right? So he lost the piety of having a floating chariot. But realistically speaking, what's the value of having a floating chariot? It's just like going a few feet off the ground. So, you know, we have to be practical. It's maybe more practical for him to just do what needs to be done instead of having a floating chariot, you know? So the same thing, when we're engaging in devotional service, we might have good qualities, bad qualities and stuff like that. But when we use it in Krishna's service, sometimes some things will come and go. But we just have to go forward with what Krishna's plan is. Okay, so piety and impiety don't come so much into it. So that's one aspect of Yudhishthira making that decision. Another aspect, of course, is him actually doing the gambling match. This is the one I was thinking of. I was hoping you'd say this one. But anyway, the gambling match, right? So it said that Vyasadev came to Yudhishthira. This is after he did the yagya, after establishing Indraprastha as his kingdom. And Vyasadev said to him that, you know, your kingdom will be amazing. You're going to create so much wealth and prosperity and righteousness all over the land. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is feeling so happy. And then Vyasadev said, but one thing, as if almost like an afterthought, but one thing, you'll also be responsible for a war that will kill millions and millions and millions of people and destroy your dynasty. Just so you know that, right? And Yudhishthira Maharaj is like, what? Okay. So then he's thinking, what do I do? So then he makes a decision that how can war happen? It can happen because of conflict, because of disobeying injunctions and things like that. So from this point onwards, I make a vow that I'll never ever disobey the orders of my superiors. So this is basically a decision he made. Now, here's the thing. We know in Krishna consciousness that when you make a big decision in life, what should you consult? Guru Shadu Sastra, right? In this case, Yudhishthira made a little blunder. He didn't consult Guru Sadhu Shastra. He just went ahead with it and made that vow. Same with Bhishma Dev. We know that Bhishma is famous for making the terrible vow, right? That's why he's called Bhishma, right? Of, you know, being celibate so that his father can get married and their kids will become the king. But actually, his vow led to a lot of issues in the kingdom, actually. So in both cases, they did not consult Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Okay? And then after that, then, you know, obviously, the Kauravas then used that in their favor. They got, Shakuni and Duryodhan convinced Dhritarashtra to then invite Yudhishthira to the gambling match. So, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj at that point didn't account for what is called, he knew the philosophy, but there's also real politic of a situation, the ground reality as well, and how they should both go in hand, right? He didn't account for the fact that Dhritarashtra and these people, because, you know, often it says in the Shastra that bad people will pray in the good intentions of good people, right? So therefore, he didn't account for that. In fact, when Dhritarashtra invited Yudhishthira to the gambling match, Yudhishthira actually was shocked. He's like, how can Dhritarashtra invite me? You know, but you know, this is where the practicality of people's conditionings have to be considered. Yes, no one's my enemy, but at the same time, you have a certain condition, and I have to consider that. Just like I know that the soul in a tiger is still a soul, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go and hug that tiger, right? Because the tiger's going to eat me. So the same way, a Vaishnav always looks at that. Look at Srila Prabhupada. He told his disciples, do not go for Mr. Price's offer. You know, Mr. Price? You know, the one with the New York building? He will cheat you. Prabhupada saw Mr. N in, you know, Juhu, that he's a bit crooked. So it's not that Prabhupada is judging him as a bad person. Prabhupada knew that he's a spirit soul, but right now he's in the conditioning and I have to act accordingly. Yudhishthira Maharaj should have taken account of that. He should have taken account for that, the fact that Dhritarashtra, Shakuni, Duryodhan are of a certain condition. I cannot afford to be so super saintly all the time in my dealings. I have to also be practical as well. You know, at one point even, he actually says to Duryodhan that, Duryodhan, why do you want to take all my wealth, which I'm going to use to serve the Brahmanas? It's as if like Duryodhan is going to care about that stuff, you know. It's like, Yudhishthira is thinking that people are on his sadhu level, but he has to be practical that no, not always. Okay? So we never underestimate the conditioning of people, even though we actually consider where they're at. So this is where Anitya Dharma and Avyavaharika Dharma both have to go hand in hand. Right? And that's why even though Krishna says, no one's more dear to me than those who give me to others, but at the same time, we have to also look. That's why Prabhupada gives so much, you know, understandings in the Gita and Ishopanishad about the different types of people that come to Krishna and the different types of people that don't come to Krishna, all those kind of things, so that we are aware of how to deal with different types of people. Okay? Right, time is running. There's actually a lot more I was going to talk about, but looks like we're running out of time. Any questions or comments, queries so far?